News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 20th of July, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And we will be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a couple of things you can lose, and maybe even some reviews. Who knows?
Why not?
Why not? Give us a call. You know the numbers. And we will start, as we have started to do in the last few weeks, with our poll. So if you'd like to call in and talk about the poll, you may do so. Windows users who download music files on peer-to-peer networks are at risk from new malware that inserts links to dangerous web pages within ASF, which stands for Advanced Systems Format, media files. The new malware inserts links to dangerous web pages within ASF media files. The possibility of this has been known for a little while, but this is the first time we've seen it done. The Advanced Systems Format is a Microsoft-defined container format for audio and video streams that can also hold arbitrary content, such as images or links to web resources. Why they would create this, we don't know. If a user plays an infected music file, it launches Internet Explorer, loads a malicious web page that asks the user to download a codec, which is a well-known trick to get someone to download malware. The actual download, of course, is not a codec, but it's a Trojan horse. And the malware has worm-like qualities. Once it's on a PC, it looks for MP3 or MP2 audio files, transcodes them to Microsoft's Windows Media Audio format, wraps them in an ASF container, adds links to itself as malware in the guise of the codec, and does not change the MP3 file extension, so you don't know it happened.
Oh, that's evil.
That's past evil. Most savvy PC users are aware of the codec ruse, but it's still effective since a lot of media players do need to receive updated codecs occasionally in order to play files.
And you just said the key there, the savvy people.
Right.
Yeah. I had a customer this week that got hit by the Macintosh Trojan that claimed to be a codec and it installed a DNS redirector. When I couldn't get to download.microsoft.com to get the new version of the Windows Media Player, that started me thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, server not found.
What exactly. Do you mean, server not found? And we've said this before. You know, I get a lot of flack from Mac people. Nobody be stupid enough to click on that. It's not stupidity. It's normal.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about it. Everybody does it.
And we're programmed to click yes.
Exactly.
You need to download this codec to view this video.
They don't even bother reading it. Right. They just click yes.
If VLC doesn't play it, you don't need that codec.
That's exactly right.
Well, I've been finding that. I've had to load some weird codecs into QuickTime. There's one called Perrin. 2 hours, I think. We've talked about it before. It loads a lot of extra QuickTime for some of the weird movie formats you find on the internet.
Perrin. That's the one.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That came from the Linux group anyway, too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, VLC certainly did.
Yeah.
So the poll is, how careful are you when you steal music? And because this thing is appearing on P2P networks, peer-to-peer networks like LimeWire and BearShare and places like that, because you still get the music, you play the music, you just, it suddenly says you got to download a codec, and you think, well, sure, I'll do that because I got the music for free. What the hell? So the choices are, the question is, how careful are you when you steal music? The choices are vary, go in commando, I'd prefer you didn't call it stealing, all my music is obtained legally, and objection, leading the witness. So far, we've got 75 votes. 53% of you lied and said all your music is obtained legally, followed by 32% of you said objection, leading the witness. So please feel free to vote in the poll, and we'll talk more about that and my website and everything else at the top of the hour. But if you'd like to comment on the poll when you make your call, you know the numbers. They're posted on our website as well. And our first caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Gentlemen, and thanks for your help here in advance. I've got a PC and two laptops on a router, a Linksys router.
Yeah.
And my PC, I can connect to the internet, no problem. The laptop, one laptop that actually belongs to a tenant, she can get on all right. My other laptop that I use remotely from my computer room here, I can't get on the internet. I get the message the Internet Explorer cannot display the web page, and it gives you likely causes, and it tells you there's a little click-on thing that you can diagnose problems.
How is that machine connecting to the internet, through the wireless or through the wire?
Through the laptop's connecting through a D-Link through the wireless.
Through the wireless, and You're sure the wireless is connected first?
Yes.
And you're getting full signal strength.
Yep, and the other laptop works fine through it. So I believe
is there a password on your wireless?
No.
I've seen that sometimes where one computer...
There should be, by the way.
There should be, yeah. And you shouldn't be using IE because of the security flaws there, but that's another story.
Now, on the one, are you using WEP, WAP?
He's just said he's not using any security.
No.
I thought the wireless would default to...
No, wireless defaults to open.
Which is terrible, because then everyone... runs right. In fact, yeah. I heard a story this week. A guy in an airport security office, his wireless defaulted to open. The rudder was broken and defaulted to open, and people standing in line to go through the security checkpoint, all their iPhones and their laptops that you have to open up and show are working, were connecting to the airport security network.
But, all right, one laptop works fine, and that's also connected wireless.
Yes, sir.
There is on our website, under I heard this on the show, what is it, the IP fix.
Yeah, WinIPFix.
WinIPFix. It's a utility that you can run, because what happens is when you get these leases for the internet, Sometimes Windows does a good job of releasing it.
That's a good point. Check your IP address. If you're getting a 169 address, that means the DHCP server is not working right. If you're getting a 192 address or a valid address, that would lead to that something in the IP stack.
Here's what you do. On your desktop, open up a window and type ipconfig. Wait, is it ifconfig or ipconfig?
Ipconfig in Windows.
Okay.
Ipconfig /all. Right. And it'll show you all your settings.
Right. Okay. And what you're looking for is the address, the IP address.
Okay.
It probably will start 192.168. If it says 192.168, copy down the last two sets of numbers. Mm-hmm. .0 dot something usually. If it starts with 10, it's probably okay. But if it starts with
169, that's like a misdialed number.
Right.
Okay.
Then check your tenant's laptop the same way to see what number he or she is getting.
Okay.
It should be the same first two numbers. Actually, it should be the same first three numbers, because it's something dot something dot something dot something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first three numbers should be the same. Now check the laptop that's not working. It's probably getting a different set of numbers. You can do one of two things. You can either type ipconfig /release.
Okay.
And then ipconfig /renew.
Okay.
And see if you get the right number. Or you can hard code that number in under the network settings.
Have you tried restarting your wireless router?
Yes, I've unplugged the router and the modem, left them sit for 3 minutes and plug them in, checked all the cable connections.
Yeah, I've seen,
I took the laptop this week to a hotel and that had a wireless system, got the same problem there.
Oh, hold on.
Then something's wrong in the laptop.
Yeah, something's definitely wrong in the laptop.
That's what I was wondering, is the D-Link card, could that go bad?
It certainly could,
yeah.
But it could be the card. It could also be that the system is already set up to be hardwired to an address you don't want.
Well, I had been using it all right. Hadn't downloaded any programs or anything.
Still, check that it should be set up for DHCP, right. Dynamic
Obtain address automatically.
And right. Is the light on for the wireless?
Yes. Yeah, all the lights are on it, and it comes up on the laptop and says the connectivity is good and signal strength excellent. So.
And this laptop did not have built-in wireless?
No.
And I would run that WinIPFix utility.
Okay.
If that doesn't work, take the card to someone else's machine and see if it works there. Mm,
good point. Okay. Yep.
And if it doesn't, and I suspect it won't, then you need a new card.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good luck.
Bye.
One of the things that we have to remember with all these cards that plug in, they are very susceptible to static electricity.
And the way it's not as big a deal anymore, but remember the old Ethernet cards mm-hmm. that had those little tiny dongles that had to plug into it that would break so easy and you'd lose them so easy.
Yeah. Right, but in this particular case, it's very possible that in carrying it around, particularly if he did it in the winter with the air conditioner on, the air was dry.
In his pocket, in his wool and or cotton pants.
Exactly. You get a little spark. You don't even notice it. It's so small. But it's more than enough to burn out delicate electronics.
The other thing I see, especially the wireless cards that stick out a little bit, because that's your antenna.
Yeah.
People will leave them in the computer all the time, so you don't lose them, which is good. But then they put them in their bag, and the bag gets dropped or set down on that antenna. And it just snaps the card off.
Right, right.
So that could be the problem, too. There's no antenna, so it's not seeing the network.
Right. If it does stick out a little, he may have broken it enough to break the connection and not enough to break the card.
Yeah. And wiggle it to see if it's an intermittent connection.
Yep. Right, right, right. All right. A couple minutes. We've got time to at least start our next call. Barry from Pittsford. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Good morning. I have two, if I could ask, please.
Go for it.
The first one is about a Linksys wireless camera that I just got, and I'm trying to get it to connect over the internet to a remote location. Now, I've plugged it in and I've got it all running. The thing is, it comes up with the address that everyone in the world comes up with, probably 192.168.1.100 or 101 or
right.
Right.
Yeah, that's a private network for your computers.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I've got it all working on my home network. How can I make it so that I can see some address from a remote location in Kansas to look at this camera?
The only thing you can do is in your modem, not your modem, your router, your wireless router. You can set up what's called, not a war zone
port
anymore.
Port forwarding. Or DMZ opens every port to a computer. Your better bet is to do port forwarding so just the camera is exposed to the internet.
Right.
Because what you have to do is open your firewall to let someone into your network.
And I understand that. But then how do I find the address for this camera? Because it can't be 192.168.
It is.
It is. It's on your computer.
Because it's on your computer. You need to find your public IP address.
Right.
Right. And that you can find in your router. Or you can also open a web browser and type whatismyip.com.
Yeah. Okay.
And that will tell you your public IP. I won't tell them the other one. Should I tell them the other one?
No, not now.
Go. whatismyip.com is a good one. Tells you what your public IP address is, and that's
because I need that to find the camera, right?
Exactly, and then you go to that.
Well, not the camera. You find your computer,
right? Well, that finds your network,
right?
And then your internal network router will forward the traffic from your public IP address to the private IP address of the computer that has the camera.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because it's not the camera that has the address. Is that hanging off the actual computer?
If he's got a standalone wireless camera,
there are network
cameras, its own little web browser in it.
No,
and
it
does not connect to a computer anywhere.
He said this was connected to his computer.
No, he said it was wireless.
Yeah, it goes right into my router.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's got a web server, right?
Right, so it's got its own web server built into it. So he needs port 80 forwarding. Now, there's a problem if... Well, depending on the router, she should be able to just forward the one port from the one IP address.
Right.
So I have to turn on port forwarding.
For that one port, which is probably 80, but your documentation will tell you.
Okay.
RTFM.
And for the camera itself. So once you do that, let's say it's on 8080. You'd be able to go to a web browser and type in whatever your IP address is, :8080, hit enter, and the picture from the camera will show up.
Okay, now would that be my IP address?
That would be, you only have one public IP address.
Okay. What is myip.com, all one word.
That's what I need.
That tells you your external public IP address.
So you've got three steps.
Okay.
Open the port forwarding for that one port on that one camera, and you have to figure out what port that is.
Yep.
Then you go get your public IP address.
Yep.
And then from somewhere else on the net, you can go to that public IP address, :, that port number, and see the camera.
Got you.
Now, unless you're buying a static IP address from your ISP.
And I'm not.
That public IP address can change occasionally, so every now and then you need to check what. In fact, I'm trying to log into my cameras at my office, and I can't, so my office's public IP must have changed.
Right.
During the thunderstorms and everything shut down.
And I'm not buying a static one right now.
Right.
Okay, do you have time for my second question? Or
we don't at the moment. I'm sorry. We have to take a break.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Yeah, hold on. We'll come back to you after the break. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Nate Nixon, is it?
Nickens.
I'm so sorry. It's 22 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We've still got Barry on the line with his second question. Quickly, Barry.
Okay, and I will be quick, but I have to thank you first. I know my IP address now.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, you guys are the very best, and the camera's already on.
There you go. Thanks.
So, thank you. The second one is totally unrelated. I have a machine that I want to put Ubuntu on.
Sure.
I hear you guys talking about it all the time. I downloaded it. Now, this machine has Windows on it. I'd like to just wipe the whole thing. The CD that I downloaded ends with an extension of ISO.
Yep.
And I do not know where to begin to wipe this machine and install
it. Okay, what
this.
You do is this. An ISO is essentially a CD image. So you use your CD burning software to burn that ISO image to a CD.
And I already did that.
No, not as a file.
Oh.
You don't burn it as a file. You actually create a new CD using that software. It becomes a bootable CD.
Okay.
So it's not on, you don't put it on there as a file. It's a different choice.
Okay.
And it depends on what your
I understand.
Burning software is. But you
I
actually
understand.
Create a new CD using that .ISO image. You then boot the machine with that, and it'll say, you know, what do you want to do? I say, I want to use the entire disk. Just go for it.
Okay. That was my problem. I burned it as a file, and I didn't know what to do then.
Yep. There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barry.
You
bye-bye.
You guys are heroes.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good luck with that Ubuntu, too. You're going to love it.
You are going to love it. All right. Before we get back to the phones, an interesting news item to no one's surprise. Apple Computer has filed suit against Macintosh clone maker SciStar Corporation, alleging copyright infringement. What is surprising is Apple's supposed remedy, recalling all of the Mac clones that SciStar has already sold. In a suit filed in district court, Apple charged SciStar with 8 claims of copyright infringement, breach of contract, trademark and trade infringement, and unfair competition. In April, SciStar began selling the so-called open computer, leading virtually the entire tech world to predict a retaliatory Apple suit. The open computer used a modified version of Apple's OS X, according to the Apple suit, and provided unauthorized patches that Apple claims were simply copied from its own website. A similar open server sold by SciStar allegedly used the Mac OS X server edition. Basically, Apple is saying that SciStar stole all their intellectual property and proprietary software. They asked for actual and statutory damages. Any profit SciStar derived from the sale of both the open computer and open server, injunction relief, and the recall of any open computer SciStar previously sold. Product recall would be an unusual step, as the suit's financial relief would most likely bankrupt the company. Nobody knows how they've managed to retrieve all of those and pay people back for them. Mandated recalls are usually ordered by the government agencies as a public safety precaution. For example, when a drug gets recalled or whatever, that's a public safety concern. I suppose unless the SciStar has a very sharp edge somewhere, that's not really a problem in this case. Although in 1998, sculptor Frederick Hart almost forced Warner Brothers to recall copies of its movies The Devil's Advocate, after Hart charged the studio portrayed his sculpture as a grotesque distortion of its true form. A last-minute settlement allowed the movie to be distributed.
It was also the Batman mess with the sculpture in the front of the building that they didn't have permission to use.
Right, right. So
Warner's not very good at this, are they?
Warner pretty much stinks at this. Yeah, there's no question to that.
Yeah, so if this SciStar...
you've got one of those SciStar, yeah, go ahead.
If they had just sold a computer and said, do whatever you want with it, they'd be okay. But they are specifically advertising it as a Macintosh-compatible clone. They're hacking the Mac OS, which is a violation of Apple's copyright and your terms of service.
Right.
It may be time for a change of the terms of service, but in the license agreement, it says you can only run it on an Apple-brand Macintosh computer.
Right.
They had to know. That is, SciStar had to know that this was coming.
Well, so now
everybody else did.
You remember when this started? We all thought it was a joke or fake to begin with.
Yeah, I remember not reporting it for several weeks because I kept saying, this can't be real.
The company didn't really exist, and it was a house in Florida, and their credit card company shut down their merchant access accounts, and you go to the warehouse.
Real enough for them to be sued out of existence, so I guess so.
A self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Yeah. Our next caller is Jim from Hamlin, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. I had the battery go bad in my ThinkPad, so I ran it a week on the charger, then I purchased a new battery. put it in, and it's not recognizing it. If I go to Device Manager, it shows it's there. I double-click on it, says it's working properly, but if I go to the power meter, it shows it's not present.
Is this an IBM brand battery?
Let's see here.
Or a Lenovo brand, if it's a new ThinkPad?
Yeah, so it doesn't really say. It's like an aftermarket. They've worked before.
That's the problem.
That's probably the problem.
A lot of drivers?
No, laptop companies are starting to put chips in their batteries, and if the battery does not have the right chip, it will not work in the computer.
Huh. It was guaranteed to work.
You get your money back.
Yeah, I get your money back. I suppose it's remotely possible you got a bad battery.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, anything is possible.
So you could.
So at any rate, I would send it back to them and see what happens. But it is also, now when you put it in, did you charge it for 24 hours before you used it?
No, I didn't.
Directions tell you you're supposed to do that.
In the machine, let it charge. I have let it set. Not the first day I did it, but the second day I just let it go all night and all day on the charger.
Did it look like it was charging?
No, a little light wasn't on or anything.
It's either a dead battery, which is always a possibility.
Or a bad charging unit.
Or it could be that the battery wasn't bad to begin with and it was the charger, right?
Either the AC adapter itself or the DC plug on the computer, which is terrible.
Yeah, that little brick that's in between, you know.
Well, wait a minute, hold on. If you take the battery out, does the computer work?
Yeah, I've been running on a charger.
Okay, it's not bad. So it's clearly either a dead battery or the wrong battery.
The chip is bad inside it.
Right. So I would start with sending the battery back and letting them replace it.
Okay, I'll try that.
And see where that takes you.
It can't be drivers or anything like that, though, right?
No, there's no driver for a battery.
No. Nope.
Oh, there isn't? Huh.
You either have a battery or you don't have a battery.
Well, there's a driver for the reporting of the battery.
Right, yeah. The battery itself, no.
That's not the issue.
Yeah.
Okay. And if the battery is clearly not charging and does not work, it can't be the driver.
Get your money back, Jim.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, our next caller, Brad from Victor, New York. Welcome, Brad. What's your question?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there was a Microsoft update and downloaded automatically, and then I couldn't get online.
Yeah, my mom ran into this, too.
Yeah, hundreds of people were getting
it's all over the forums. There's a Microsoft update that kills Zone Alarm.
And
the fix is to remove that update from Microsoft or to disable Zone Alarm, and the former being much safer.
Yeah, all you got to do is lower the tolerance on Zone Alarm down to medium, update the patch for Zone Alarm, which they already corrected the next day, put that in, you can then up the security on it, and you're good to go.
Okay, well, my way of doing it was to do a system restore back a couple of days before that update came in, and I had already turned off the download automatic updates.
Right.
But when I set it back a couple of days, of course, that was before I had turned that part off, so it downloaded it again, and the problem reoccurred.
Yeah, that's why you shouldn't do it that way.
So I did it again, and this time that I prevented it from coming. Now I've got Service Pack 3 ready to download.
Okay, Brad,
mm-hmm.
honest, do what we said, and it will fix everything. If you download that one update now that Microsoft has fixed it, all your problems will go away.
Okay.
And there's no reason to do 6 or 8 or 10 other things.
Okay. So first, make sure that Zone Alarm is up to date.
Yes.
You make sure Zone Alarm is up to date, and then you should be able to redo the download, and you should now be fine to install Service Pack 3 and go on.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Sounds like a plan.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Our next caller is Marie from Fairport, New York. Thank you, Marie. What's your question?
Well, mine is very similar to something that somebody had earlier about a computer not working through the internet, but mine went out as soon as I downloaded the Computer Associate Security Suite. It was immediately upon rebooting that I could no longer get the internet through wireless in this computer. It's a new computer, and I thought, better be safe and put the security on from FrontierNet.
Well, it's safe now.
Ain't getting out to the internet.
Yeah. That's
unfortunately the purpose of the security is to block traffic so the bad programs can't get to the internet.
Right.
The danger is they stop the good programs too. So you have to go into your firewall settings and tell it to allow the programs you want to get to the internet.
Well, that would be great if I understood what I was doing.
And there is the problem in having security settings.
And actually, I went to their site, picked up the information on how to redo the firewall to allow things, and I did that, and I still get nothing. I've communicated with them through their tech support email thing, and it told me to go to the same site.
If you disable the Computer Associates temporarily, you should be able to right-click on it, and there's a disable or shut down. Does that let you get to the Internet?
But it didn't.
Mm, so there's something.
And I'm convinced that it's somehow, there's some setting that I'm missing.
Well, that's possible, Marie, but unfortunately, at this point, somebody's going to have to put their eyes on that machine.
Uh-huh. Somebody who knows something.
Right, right, right. So you're going to have to take it to somebody. Now, if you're anywhere near the city, both day, or you're in Fairport, so either Dave or Steve can look at that for you. But, of course, I'll say it for them. That's their business.
Mm-hmm.
And they do charge for that because that's how they make a living.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, it would probably be best because it could be any one of 50 things.
Mm-hmm.
And without being able to see it, it's a 20-minute fix in a four-hour phone call. So
Just a couple questions. If I tried to uninstall the security program, because I've noticed things on their site that seem to be blogs of people saying it doesn't install,
Right. Well, that was something else I was going to suggest. You know, if you uninstall the CA security suite,
mm-hmm.
and then that lets you get back on the Internet,
mm-hmm.
then I would suggest you use Avast as your antivirus program, and that's at avast.com. A-V-A-S-T, as in Avast Me Hardies.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zone Alarm from zonelabs.com or free.zonealarm.com, actually. You can see all of these at the Security Tango, which is securitytango.com.
Mm-hmm.
So go to there and download those things, and that will give you the same sort of protection. You have your antivirus, Adaware, and SpyBot for anti spyware protection and Zone Alarm for your firewall.
Okay. Okay.
They all have free versions. They all work great.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if this Computer Associates, because it's the one from FrontierNet. And I'm
yes, it is Computer Associates. And they are a very good company with very good software. It's just you're right. In some cases, it does not install correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And spend an hour uninstalling, reinstalling, whatever, whatever. Or you can just uninstall and try something else.
But it will uninstall, okay?
It should.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's the big if.
Well, the
it
other
should.
Thing, oh, another sure. great program to use to uninstall stuff is called Revo. R-E-V-O.
At Revo.com. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Nick Nickers. Nate Nickens. I'm thinking Nick Nickerson for some reason. I'm Nick Francesco, and I'm going to have to take a pill during the break. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And after 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. Our, let's talk about this this possibility here. It could be time for Apple to bring the aluminum MacBook Pro casing to the MacBook. With the iPhone G3 launch out of the way, it's time to turn to what appears to be the next big thing on Apple's roadmap for the year, new notebooks. The Commercial Times reported that Apple has increased its orders of printed circuit boards for notebooks by 20% compared to last quarter. Macs are selling pretty well lately, but that's a stronger boost than would be expected from the usual seasonal patterns. And it's unlikely that Apple would be planning for that kind of boost unless it planned to trot out new hardware this quarter. There are a few signs that Apple is about ready for new notebooks. Intel has shipped a new notebook processor and chipset, albeit a little late. Apple Insider reported earlier this month that a redesign was imminent after confirming that a supposed image of new MacBook posted on a message board was genuine. Also, Apple values the back-to-school shopping season more than just about any other PC company. Last year, it unveiled new iMacs in early August, just before the rush back to college. Given that the MacBook design is aging, to say the least, the time seems about right for Apple to bring the aluminum casing and the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air to the MacBook line. So we'll see if new MacBooks are forthcoming from Apple. Our next caller is Tom. Tom, where are you calling from?
Canandaigua, guys. Thank you for the show. Appreciate
Thanks.
Your efforts.
Thank you.
My question has to do with possible problems related to reactivating Windows. I have a two-year-old XP home desktop.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of junk.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of programs. I don't know if I've got something that's also maybe causing me some trouble with my anti-everything
right.
suite.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if I just do the system restore, I've got my OEM restore disk, what sort of problems I might run into.
What type of computer is it?
The brand name?
Yeah.
It's a E-Machine.
Yeah, you'll be able to reactivate
as
it.
As long as you don't change the hardware any, you can probably reactivate it. The problem comes if you replace the hard drive or replace the video card or things like that. Then it won't reactivate because it thinks you're trying to steal it on a second computer, and you have to call Microsoft and
Do the 800 number, and if they ask you a question, the easiest thing to say is that the hard drive died and you had to reload the system.
Or the motherboard or something like that.
Yeah. But since you're doing it with everything still the same, you could wipe it, have it delete the partition, back everything up, and then just reinstall it fresh.
And as far as when they go to do the updates...
It'll do it, no problem.
Do it even though it says, you've got to have Service Pack 2 or something in there?
Well, you can
that
still
will be
do
one
it.
Of the updates.
Yeah, that'll be one of the updates.
No, wait, hang on a minute. Is your original disk Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2? Because I don't think Service Pack 1 is available anymore, and Service Pack 2 won't load without it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I do it all the time. Yeah. If it's a basic, I put... if it's just a basic, not even Service Pack 1...
Well, the Service Pack 2 disk has been out for so long.
Yeah, I do the Service Pack 2, and bam. But if you're doing a fresh install, here's the key. Since you're doing a fresh install, put the original in, and then go right to Service Pack 3 before anything else gets on it. Okay. Service Pack 3, I have found, will work fine as long as you haven't installed anything out before that.
Okay.
And Service Pack 3 includes most of the updates, and they roll them all together. That was always the annoying thing. You load Service Pack 2 fresh, and then you have 115 updates to load.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And 27 reboots.
This isn't a regular retail Windows. This is the disk that came with the machine that's got
It'll do it.
It should update fine.
Yep.
Okay. And if it doesn't call them and say, look, it's the same machine.
Yes.
I had to replace a component.
Well, you'll get a screen that'll say to activate it. It'll say whether it can do it once you put the code in. But since you've got the key code on the side of the machine, it should do it no problem.
And then you'll get the Windows Genuine Advantage screen that you'll have to go through, too.
Yeah. Right.
So just do it. You should have no issues.
Okay. Because I haven't messed with anything. I mean, all it's got is a little extra memory in it since...
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
No.
Years ago.
It should go.
Okay, guys. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck.
Have a great day.
You too.
I had a customer this week whose Windows was really hosed, and she still had her Windows disk, but did not have her Windows product code. It wasn't stuck to the computer. It wasn't stuck on the disk pack.
It wasn't stuck on the...
wasn't stuck anywhere. She had to buy a new copy of Windows.
Jewel case? Yeah.
Nope. Had to buy a new copy of Windows just because she couldn't find that code. And in fact, we had another guy putting Vista on his Mac, which is you, but... because the product code sticker is usually on the shrink wrap on the outside.
Yep.
They pull the shrink wrap off to get to the jewel case and throw the shrink wrap away.
Right.
With the serial number on it.
Right.
So he brings it in, and I'm looking on the jewel case. Well, there's no product code. It should have been on maybe on the shrink wraps. Oh, I threw that away. He gets on the phone real quick and calls his wife. Pull that out of the garbage.
And she did.
And she did. Then my next problem was he bought the 64-bit version of Vista.
Oh.
And that won't work on a 32-bit computer.
Yeah.
Actually, so Ken, if you're listening, I'm going to call you on Monday.
Yeah.
And you bought the wrong version of Vista. Sorry.
Oops. It's always something.
It's always something. And that's becoming more and more of a problem. You know, a lot of people are talking about, well, I bought a 64-bit system and I installed a 64-bit operating system, and it's not really as much faster as I thought it would be. There's two reasons for that. One, it's not really going to be that much faster. But the other part of the problem is a lot of what you're running is not 64-bit. And so the system has to switch its entire environment from 64 to 32 back to 64-bit as you run that thing. And, of course, since the way Windows and most operating systems work, it kind of round robins. You may hit that thing 50 times a second. So you find that it slows it down considerably. If you ran all 64-bit software all the time, it would be much faster. But you're going to find that a lot of the things you run are not 64-bit.
And the big
market's
advantage,
not ready yet.
The big advantage of 64-bit is huge memory addressing. So if you're doing DNA sequencing and you need 3 billion records in your database, you need 64-bit.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Nate Nickens, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 49 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's your turn, Uncle Dave.
This week, well, I'm ready for a two-parter. Yeah, this is so good. We got to do it in two parts. Okay?
All right.
Just to get you warmed up. All right, Lucy Lou. It's not in my job description, nor is it on my website, nor on my company logo, that we're a big, huge library for all the software out there for all the computers. And what I'm talking about is, hello, don't get PO'd at me, because over the course of not 1 year, not two, but three, you didn't take the time to make your recovery disk. And now it's going to cost you an extra $75 because of your laziness. And I'm the idiot because I just don't have it laying around and can restore it? Hello? No. What's wrong with this picture? Because of your stupidity, you want to blame me.
For lack of forethought.
To
be polite.
Right to my face. Well, what kind of computer shop are you if you can't do the restore? Well, what kind of a computer owner are you if you can't find stupid instructions that are so simple to put in CDs and make your own?
It's usually the first thing that pops up on the computer.
It is
very unfortunate that we have a situation where you cannot, often enough, you cannot get the CD without paying extra.
Right.
This machine was awful cheap. Well, because you didn't get stuff. That's why.
Or it's on that hidden partition on the hard drive, but when your hard drive fails, you're screwed anyway.
Yeah. And you're right. But the first thing you do when you get it, if you read the instructions that came with it, and usually it's a one sheet that's mostly just pictures, it will tell you get some CDs and make, that's assuming you have a burner in this machine, which most of them do.
Yeah, 99. But, I mean, it was 3 years she had this machine. Oh, I never got around to it. Right. And then starts insulting me because I don't have that laying around. Do you know how many darn CDs I would have to have a whole library?
We go through that with our customers, too. And it's worse on the Windows side. In fact, I just had one this week. I don't have the disks anymore. There's only been 469 Mac models.
Right.
So I would only need 469 CD sets, although some of those CD sets are 8 or 10 CDs.
Right.
So on the Windows side, how many thousands and thousands of possible combinations?
I would have to have because a every separate machine, storage room.
Right. Every machine is a separate set of drivers, and the CDs are different.
And within it, they can have various different drivers, too, because of different motherboards.
Yep.
Right.
Stay tuned for part two next week.
All right. Here we go. All right. That's it, kiddies. Put away your footy jammies. Put your mugs of hot cocoa in the dishwasher. And we're going to give Uncle Dave his shot for another week. Put him back in the rocking chair and leave him sitting around. And that's the end of Story Hour with Uncle Dave. In the meantime, we're all going to go hose ourselves off, and particularly hose off Dave. So we're going to take a break. Coming up is all the stuff you really listen to Wham for, the news, the weather, the sports, all the good stuff. We will be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more sound bites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Nate Nickens, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 57 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. All right, at the top of the show, I talked a little bit about our poll this week, and it's all about music files on peer-to-peer networks like BearShare and LimeWire and all of those. Windows users who download music files on peer-to-peer networks are at risk from new malware that inserts links to dangerous web pages within ASF Advanced Systems Format media files. The new malware inserts links to dangerous web pages within ASF media files. The possibility of this has been known for a little while, but this is the first time we've seen it done. Advanced Systems Format is a Microsoft-defined container format for audio and video streams that can hold also arbitrary content such as images or links to web resources. If a user plays an infected music file, it will launch Internet Explorer and load a malicious web page that asks the user to download a codec, a well-known trick to get someone to download malware. The actual download is not a codec, but a Trojan horse, which installs a proxy program on the PC. The proxy program allows hackers to route other traffic through the compromised PC, helping the hacker essentially cover their tracks for other malicious activity. Here's the cool part. The malware also has worm-like capabilities. Once on a PC, it looks for MP3 or MP2 audio files transcodes them to Microsoft's Windows Media Audio format, wraps them in an ASF container, and adds links to other further copies of the malware in the guise of that codec. The MP3 extension in the files is not modified, however, so victims may not even notice the change. So what happens is if you get infected by this because you downloaded something from a peer-to-peer network, and of course they are targeting all the latest and greatest stolen music.
Yeah, this is not a new thing. This has been happening for years. This is just a new instance of an old thing.
A new instance of, of an old thing. You know, it used to be you would download a file from a peer-to-peer network and it wouldn't run. And you think, ah, bad download. Well, it wasn't a bad download. No. You got a virus. Now it'll play and you've still got a virus. And what this virus does is go into your machine and change all of your MP3s to copies of the virus. So if you then share your music with your friends, they get it too. Nice. Real nice of you.
Comment from the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
I gotta wonder, is there any conceivable possibility?
Absolutely.
RIAA?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're thinking what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking exactly what you're thinking. This could have been done by what we traditionally think of as the good guys.
There's already been bands that have said they put fake copies of their hit song on the networks with plays for a few seconds and then says, you've stolen our song, shame on you, go buy it.
Right, right. And that's different from actively damaging somebody's machine. And honestly, to actively damage somebody's machine would open them up to a massively huge lawsuit.
But to be fair, if these things started on a peer-to-peer network, isn't it conceivable that they could be had in other ways as well after it's been circulated a little bit?
Yes.
So
well, but that's
eventually it's not only peer-to-peer network.
Right. I download the newest something song and I pick a star, any star that's up on there, and they're all the latest ones.
Bob Seger?
Probably not Bob Seger. Wouldn't be their first choice.
JJ Cale.
Yeah. But, you know, you get that song, you think, oh, great. In the meantime, all your songs are now infected. So a friend calls you and says, oh, you know what I really love is that song you've got called blah, blah, blah. You didn't even download that from that. Maybe you got a legitimate copy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's now malware, too.
So he puts it on a flash drive.
Right. Gives it to the friend. All their files are now screwed up. And that goes on and on and on and on.
And wouldn't that be exactly what someone like the RIAA would want?
You would think so. Well, but no, because it doesn't stop you from playing it.
Oh, really?
It just infects over and over and over.
What's the payload in the end?
The payload in the end is it sets up stuff to check your machine and look inside it and do whatever it wants to do with your machine.
So steal information from your computer and spam a botnet.
And it hides itself by letting you still play the music. So this really wouldn't be an RIAA thing.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
so all right, the poll, the basic idea behind the poll at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how careful are you when you steal music? And the choices are vary, go in commando, I'd prefer you didn't call it stealing. All of my music is obtained legally, and objection, leading the witness. So far,
gotta have that. Plead the fifth.
Yep.
Plead the fifth. Yeah, I don't have that one in there because I can't think of everything at midnight. In the heck with everybody. Right now, we have 97 votes. 58% of you are lying and saying all of your music is obtained legally. 28% of you say objection, leading the witness. And 7% are honest and say, I'd prefer you didn't call it stealing. But once you have voted in the poll, I know that's not enough for you people. You want to be able to say more than just clicking a button. So underneath the poll, you will see a yellow box. If you click give us your opinion, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's right. It's asknick.com.
And you can then post your opinion. So, that will lead you to places where you can then say, it's not stealing because the government is something or whatever. I don't really care. So whatever will let you sleep.
And that brings up a couple of other interesting points that I just ran into because I was out of the country last week. The anti-counterfeiting trade agreement voted on by the Gang of Eight summit in Geneva a couple weeks ago, supported by the RIAA and opposed by the EFF, basically says that border guards and airport security can search your possessions without a warrant, and if they suspect you have illegal copyright material, they can confiscate your laptop, your iPod, your media storage device, whatever, and destroy it.
On a suspicion.
On a suspicion. With no proof of law, no trial, no whatever.
No nothing.
No, nothing. So when I crossed the border back from Canada last week, I hid my iPod.
Sure.
He didn't ask me about that, but I hid my iPod.
Sure.
Of course, everything on my iPod is legal anyway, but how do you prove that?
Right. When you're sitting at the border.
My discs are back at home. Right. All my discs have been ripped. It's on the iPod.
Right. Right. And that's only quasi-legal, as you well know.
Yeah. Quasi-legal. Right. So it's.
And here's the other thing. That's one of the things that we're discovering people are doing, are buying the cheap laptops like the $400 EEPC to take on a trip. It's $400. If you lose it, that's going to hurt, but not hurt as much as a $1,500 laptop. And it just lets you get to the net. We put all your stuff up in Google Docs or wherever, or you put copies on the machine and you don't have to worry about it. And then you take that little thing. It's light. It's easy to carry. And if, in fact, it is confiscated at the border, it's not the end of the world.
Disposable.
It's disposable computing.
They exactly did. Right. There was another study out that.
Not another study.
Two studies. What was it? 16,000 laptops a day are lost at airports.
Right.
And most of them are never recovered.
Right.
There's the old delay tactic where you put your laptop on the scanner, it goes through the box, and then the guy in front of you gets stopped at the security scanner, metal in his pocket or something. His partner, who's already through the other side, picks up your laptop and walks away.
Right.
But that was a big thing. And, I lost the other thing. Laptops being lost. What was the other thing?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I'll think of it later.
You said that, 90-some% of these laptops are not recovered. I guarantee you, they're recovered by somebody.
By somebody, not by the owner.
Can they do that, by the way? Can they, have a fire sale at some point?
They do. The airport security does. They put it on eBay. Most airports and police departments and whatnot put stuff on eBay.
I need to get a friend in the airport.
Yeah.
Do you see these advertisements for the government auctions?
Yeah.
That's where these things go.
I need a friend.
And I remember the other bit, encryption. If you have your hard drive encrypted or files encrypted on your hard drive, there was a court case. You do not have to give them the password. That's unreasonable search and seizure.
Ooh.
They can still detain you until they get a court order.
Right.
But you don't have to get, because there was a case where a guy had a file with a suspicious name and the police asked him for the password. He gave it to them. It was a bad file. And so they arrested him. And the courts decided you don't have to give the password.
Fourth Amendment.
Yeah. So
From now on, I'm naming all my files some form of happy, happy, joy, joy.
Right. So there's your first guess. Don't name your file stolen copy of Batman movie.
Yeah, right.
A little obvious. Yeah.
You think happy, happy, joy, joy would be a little? What is that? That sounds like drugs.
Oh, there you go. Now you're screwed anyway. That was the other thing I've read about customs. They can tear your car apart looking for drugs, and they don't have to put it back together.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. They've never had to do
that. Yeah, that's why whenever I travel, I cross the border in Wisconsin. What? I didn't hear a thing.
They're going to drive traffic to Amtrak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Our next caller, waiting patiently on the line for, I think, 7 or 8 hours, is Bob from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Correction, 10 hours, but thank you. I just purchased, which is not here yet, a very, very high-end, what I've been told, desktop system. And before, I had a laptop, which was still very good, but everybody said if I wanted, extreme power, I had to get a desktop. So I made that big move.
Right.
The thing that's not clear, and I went on their website and many other websites, I purchased with that I'm not sure the proper wording, NVIDIA or whatever.
NVIDIA.
Okay, NVIDIA GeForce 9800 1 gig video card.
Wow,
that's good.
That's a great card.
Yeah.
Well, they said if you're going to do it, and it was a big thing to get me to go to desktop because I have two beautiful HP laptops, and they said if you're going to do it, do it. So.
Yep.
That's doing it.
It's got two DVI-I ports on the back of it. Now my question is, I want to run, convert what you can that to an HDMI cable, go to my monitor, the other port. At the same time, can I run a cable from that to the back of my TV, not necessarily doing two things at the same time, but so I can at one point play some games on my TV? Can I use both ports like that? Is that what that's for?
Yes. In most computers, the dual ports are active at the same time. A few years ago, it was one or the other, but not both.
And they're independent.
And they're independent. You can do what's called mirroring, where you show the same image on both cards, and that's common for presentations or whatnot.
Okay.
Or spanning, which creates one big virtual desktop off of both the monitors.
Okay, great. So that is a pretty decent video card then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very I'm good. Not sure there's a more pretty decent video card.
So I'll tell you what. If you're not sure, drop it off to my shop and give me about 6 months to test it out.
He beat me to it. He beat me to it.
Of course, yeah, 2 years from now, everybody will have it.
Yeah, right.
It's, a lot of times it's a leapfrog, and NVIDIA's got the Super WhizBang card now, and then ATI will come out with their next card, and then NVIDIA comes out with their next card.
But NVIDIA has always, to me, been the best because they're... Drivers are so good under Linux.
And then when ATI got bought by AMD, we don't really like that.
Yeah, we don't like that at all.
Bob, but you got good advice.
You got a heck of a machine there.
Well, what are you doing with that machine?
Surfing, word processing.
Surfing the internet?
You know, to be honest with you, they make it easy to upgrade so easily, you know, to go to the 6 gigs. It was $30 more. So in the end, yes, you pay $700 or $800 more, but you have the best. But the only thing I'm using the graphics for is to run a model helicopter flight simulator, which is 3D. What we practice on, so we're not crashing $3,000 helicopters.
This is, that's always modeling, a good deal
First-person shooters, CAD cam, stuff like that.
I want it to run very well, and of course, once you add that and a terabyte of memory and everything else, it's still expensive, but I was told it's an extreme great setup, and I'd be very happy with it.
You should be ecstatic with it.
You're not going to end up in Dave's shop saying how slow this machine is.
Right. Heck no.
And once you really learn to fly those helicopters without crashing them, give me a call. I want to ride.
I actually already can, but we still practice. It makes it a lot easier.
See, flying is easy. It's the landing that's hard.
It's landing that's hard. Well, in a helicopter, all of it's hard.
Thank you very much, then, for everything.
Thank you, Bob.
What was that scene in one of the Terminator movies where he's flying the helicopter and he grows a third hand to shoot the gun?
Right.
Because you need two hands and 2 feet to fly a helicopter.
Right. If you're lucky, that's all you need.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Nate Nickens, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 24 minutes after the hour... You are listening to Soundbites. Hey, folks, the Mac security issue's been fixed by Mozilla. Firefox released an update to Firefox Friday. Mozilla released an update to Firefox, its popular web browser. Clearly not enough sugar. The update is available for download either from the Firefox website or through Firefox itself if you select Check for Updates from the Help menu. Firefox 3.01 corrects a Mac OS X specific issue involving malformed GIF files. The security issue announced earlier this week was identified by a member of Apple Product Security. Two other critical security issues were also identified and corrected in this update. Also new in this update are several stability improvements, improvements to the phishing and malware database, and other changes. Firefox 3, of course, for the Mac, requires Mac OS X 10.4 or later. I cannot wait until Mac changes its numbering, and I no longer have to say Mac OS 10, 10 dot something.
You don't. We just say Mac OS 10.4.
The Cognoscenti do.
Or Mac 10.4. 10.5 is the current version.
You could use the cat name.
Leopard or Tiger. Any Tiger or better.
I can never remember. I own a Mac, and I can't remember any of this.
Okay, Snow Leopard is next.
Snow Leopard. Snow Leopard like an old leopard, I say.
Well, what's interesting is they talked about Snow Leopard at the developers conference, the next version of the OS. The rumors are it's going to be Intel only, no new features, just bug fixes and stability improvements.
And that deserves a whole new name.
Yeah. Never well, because it's similar enough to Leopard, so it's Snow Leopard.
It's
an enhancement to Leopard.
Ah.
Yeah.
What are they going to rename the old one? Taddy Old Leopard?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is on Mozilla, and we haven't had Cougar yet. We had Panther, which is a cougar. Firefox 2 got updated also.
You didn't get it.
The same patches. Yeah, and I know.
Okay. Did you see John Stewart
in the Cougar this
week? Just keep going.
So Firefox 2 got updated to .16, 2.0.0.16. And that's for people who have older OSs. They can still run the older Firefox.
Right.
So it's nice that they're still updating the old version.
For Firefox people are all good. Our next caller is Jerry from Gates, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question? Hello?
Jerry, cut out listening to the radio.
Turn off your radio.
Jerry, I'm sorry, Jerry. We can't wait for you to catch up if you're listening on the radio. All right. Our next caller is John from Fairport, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
I have two. I have recently purchased two external USB hard drives. I want to store data on them.
Right.
First question, can I get a virus on those external?
Yes.
Sure, yep.
If you can connect them to the computer, you can get a virus on them.
Okay.
Because viruses live in files, and you put files on the computer.
It won't harm the hard drive, but well, any computer you connect it to, it will then do whatever it does on that computer as well.
And one of the virus payloads is erase all hard drives.
Right.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. That's one word for it.
Sweet.
Why does it concern you, John?
Well, as I've gotten more and more into using a computer, I have gotten more and more stuff that I really can't afford to lose.
Right.
Well, that's why God made backups, and you should too.
Well, it sounds like that's what he's intending to do is make a backup, but it is possible to have a virus in your backup.
And, right. you can run a virus checker on the drives that are connected by USB.
Okay, so that sounds like it's something I should do.
Absolutely.
Yep. Now,
That will greatly increase the amount of time it takes to run the virus checker. And you really, if you run your virus checker, make sure it's updated and running correctly and everything else, before you connect that external drive and save files to it, then you will be fairly sure that there is no virus on that backup drive. And I say only fairly sure. But you can put a virus on a backup drive, absolutely.
Okay. My second question was, I would like to buy a uninterruptible power supply.
Good idea.
Great idea.
Yes. I'm not interested in having the ability to run the computer for a long period of time if the power fails, just a couple of minutes to shut the thing down.
That's the key.
That's generally how they're rated. The more expensive ones will run longer. You can get a good one for 40, 50 bucks that will give you 15, 20 minutes.
Do you have a CRT or an LCD monitor?
CRT, but I'll be buying the LCD sometime.
Yeah,
on the other hand, if you automate the shutdown, you only have to put the computer on it. You don't need anything else.
One of the features of a UPS is that when the power fails, the UPS tells the computer to shut down.
Generally either a serial or USB or in some cases Ethernet port on the UPS that you hook to your computer and run software in your computer, a driver, that when it detects that the power has gone out for more than a half a second or a second and a half or whatever the number is, it shuts your machine down.
Normally, runs a normal shutdown procedure.
Right, as opposed to just crashes it.
Now,
it actually shuts it down.
The reason for buying this uninterruptible power supply is to eliminate electrical spikes coming through the wiring in the house.
You want to look for one that's marked automatic voltage regulation. Or AVR, or what's the other word they use? Basically, it takes the AC in, converts it to DC, charges the battery, converts it back to AC, runs your computer off the battery. So you're never running on the AC directly. You're always running through the battery, which eliminates all of the power problems.
Right, and there are two reasons for that. One is and a battery will handle spikes much better than any other device.
Oh, yeah. And spikes and surges are actually not that common.
And that's the second problem.
Yeah, it's brownouts.
Brownouts, right.
Yeah, are much more common.
Right. Low voltage coming to your computer, which is actually more dangerous.
And that happens when your refrigerator kicks in or your AC does.
Yeah, if you notice your lights dim a little bit.
Okay. Now, you gentlemen said $45, $50. Can I get one for that kind of money with the automatic voltage regulation?
When they're on sale,
a rule. You got to look around.
APC is a good brand. It's probably the most well-known brand.
Right.
American Power Conversions. We also, in my store, we sell Belkin. Belkins are a little cheaper. APCs are a little better made, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. The big question is how much voltage or wattage.
VA.
How many VAs you want?
Volt amps.
You sort of add up everything you want on the UPS, just your computer, maybe your monitor. And
box and the monitor is all you need.
The problem is, even when you do a normal shutdown, the system is going to ask you, do you want to save these five? You know, you're in the middle of working on something that hasn't been saved. Do you want to save this? Do you want to save this? Do you want to save this? So you best have the monitor on there so that you can say yes.
Especially with the CRT, you may not want to get, say, a 350 or 400 VA. You might want to go for the 600 or 700 VA. So on the back of your computer, on the back of your monitor, on the back of every electrical device, it will say its electric requirements, how many volts and amps it needs, and that gives you the VA.
Okay. Right. Super, but you didn't make my day with the virus getting into my...
Sorry.
Well, I was going to mention that a little earlier when we were talking about the malware. The email most ISPs have virus scanners on their email. So it's rare to get a virus through email. You typically get your viruses through IM, through peer-to-peer, through...
Or attachments in email.
Well, most of the virus scanners are scanning attachments.
You'd be shocked at how few actually do check for spam.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, not spam, but viruses.
They do viruses.
They do both?
I meant viruses. Yeah. Not as much as you might think.
Sometimes I'll see a message at the end of somebody's message. This has been scanned with whatever. And I really love it when it is a virus or it is a phishing attack. They went so far as to put, you know, don't give your private information to anyone. Click here and then give it to us.
Yeah, right.
Gentlemen, you have a good program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Our next caller is Andy from Bloomfield, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question? Andy?
Big problem here. A while back, and it was quite a while, you guys had talked about, I think I even talked to you about it, as far as getting antivirus software. You said, don't buy it. Get it off the internet for free. And it's all I got tied up with McAfee. Be that as it may, we haven't got it anymore. And I've got viruses on this machine where at a point where all I get is pop-ups and it won't run.
Right.
That we bought Antivirus 2008. And it hasn't done anything for us, okay? I'm trying to go through support now, but I can't get anywhere.
Who Antivirus 2008 from whom?
Yeah, good question.
Thank you.
Good question.
Okay, first, let me go back a little ways. You told you should get free antivirus, and that's how you got hooked up with McAfee.
That's how I remember it.
McAfee doesn't come free.
A couple years ago?
Never.
Never. Maybe it
well,
wasn't. It
from may, 1982, which is when John may, McAfee first started the product.
It may be bundled with your computer, but you paid for it.
There you go.
And
you only it usually only get a 30 or 60 day subscription.
Right.
Yeah, we had it for a while, and then we let it go, and now because we never had a problem. Well, now we got a problem.
Yeah.
Well, you never had a problem because it was working.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And the problem that you're running into now is if your computer is infected, you usually cannot install an antivirus. You need to take that hard drive to a different computer that's already clean, and remove the viruses from that hard drive.
And that's where these guys come in. Dave and Steve will do that for you, but you will pay them to do that because that is their business.
Sometimes with the commercial programs, it may be Norton Antivirus 2008. That's a common one.
Yeah.
It comes with a boot CD where you can try to remove the viruses. The problem there is the virus definitions on that CD are old and they cannot remove everything.
Gotcha.
And the other problem is with programs like Norton and McAfee, the virus writers know about these big programs and they don't release a virus until it gets past Norton or McAfee.
Mm-hmm.
So having those programs is almost worthless because the new viruses are going to get by them anyway.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons we recommend the smaller antivirus programs like Avast and AVG. Because they are smaller, they're not as well known, and they also have free versions.
So what do I do?
If you have a second computer that you know is clean, you can pull the hard drive out of your first one and connect it to the second one and scan it.
That's beyond us.
Yeah, then bring it into a shop.
Yeah, bring it into a shop where we do it and literally pull your hard drive out. That's the first thing we do and put it on our test bench so it's not loaded. And we just clean it and do our repairs right from there.
Now, how do I do that? I mean, who do I contact for that?
Just bring it, NRIPC. We're on 70 Empire Boulevard, Monday through Friday. The number is 442-4843.
442-4843. Yeah.
And like I say, we're at 70 Empire Boulevard, which is just a half a mile up from Dan's Crafts.
I know where it is.
And we're open Monday through Friday.
Gotcha.
Bring it on in.
That's it.
Okay.
Thanks, fellas.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Now, let me be the one to say, you will probably be in line. There's no way you're going to drop it off, wait, and an hour later get it back. When Dave says it takes a couple of hours to do, he means a couple of hours over a day.
A couple of billable hours. Yeah. It may sit there scanning on the bench for a week.
Right. And it depends on how big the hard drive is, how many problems
how
you've got.
It is.
Right. As to how long it will take. And you might be surprised by this, but Dave has an amazing number of customers. So you may have to wait in line to get on the bench. It's like bringing your car. You can make an appointment, but even so, you leave it for a day, right? Or a couple of days or whatever. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Nate Nickens, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 36 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We should mention a little bit about Second Life. We had a great turnout Friday night.
We had a great turnout Friday night.
We're all there, and I was surprised the other folks that showed up from the events thing that I did.
Dave did a lovely job and listed us in the events thing, which I haven't, of course, even seen yet because I didn't look ahead far enough. But he listed us in the events thing. We had people who've never heard of us, never heard of Soundbites, showed up. We had a really nice hours-long discussion about various this's and that's, and it was really kind of polite and very nice and very friendly and very pleasant.
We had, I think, 18 folks.
Yeah, we had 18 folks in, and that for the very first event ever listed for us is a significant number. And it seemed, you know, one of the folks, I think it was Ashcan, asked what the rules are and questions. And, of course, we didn't have any because we don't think ahead.
We make it up as we go.
Exactly.
Along.
But it seemed the way it worked out best was Dave and I, and it would have been Steve had he been there, but Stargate was on.
My avatar was there.
So his avatar was there. You were Ruth. You were Ruth with a beard.
Yeah.
You simply did not res in correctly. You were the default Ruth
person.
That was
weird.
I have a picture. It's up there if you want to see it.
Where?
If you go to soundbites.org, right on the front page, there's the list of down below. So the third or fourth or whatever paragraph, join us in Second Life. And check out both our visitors list and our picture gallery.
Yeah.
And if you click on the picture gallery, the top one is what happened on Friday.
One thing I should mention, and it will be coming soon, my wife is working on a step-by-step procedure. She's got pretty much most of it done up. I told her we might add some pictures of it, snapshots and that. But she is doing literally like she did for her step-by-step procedure. So even the beginner who's just first turning on a computer will be able to follow her steps and literally get you to Soundbites Island and into Second Life. The whole nine yards as far as downloading the software, getting in, all the particulars. She is doing it very meticulous because that's the way she is, being an accountant.
Right.
Step-by-step procedure, and we hope to have that up soon. But she's guinea-pigging Sam, my office manager, see how that works, the two of them doing it.
Right. Where did you find all those other avatars? You were Londo for a while, and someone was Vosh. From Babylon 5.
We got them in Second Life. Yep. We got them at the Babylon 5 station.
I haven't found that one yet. I loved it when you were K-9 and turned into, got legs and walked
stopped,
away.
And when he stood up. I don't know what that was. I have no idea what that was about. But yeah, you can have different avatars. So for a while I was Malari, and Lolly was one of the Vorlons. Might have been Tosh, but probably not. There are multiple different Vorlons. And we had a whole bunch of people that I've never met before. God bless each and every one of them for finding us and playing along. And it was...
that Eagle Wolf with the wings?
Eagle Wolf has the wings. It was a pretty interesting group. People who were very happy to be there. Very, very pleased to be meeting all of us in Soundbites. And we had a real nice discussion with a lot of good questions and a lot of nice stuff going on. So we will certainly be doing this again.
This coming Friday.
And Dave and I will be there. Steve will be sleeping in a chair. And
I'll try and give it a shot, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, join
if
us.
If you don't mind.
No, by all means. The more the merrier.
This is still all practice for when we do it for real come September. So come and help us rehearse because heaven knows we need it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Dansville. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I love to blame this on you guys, but I can't really. I did follow your advice about backups, and so I bought my wife a Western Digital 2 terabyte MyBook Studio Edition backup, and I have it set up on her desktop in RAID 1, so it's mirroring, so we really have 1 terabyte of storage. Problem is we turn off the computer and go to turn it on the next time, and we get as far as the blue screen that says, you know, push F10 for setup, whatever it is, and it won't boot up.
It's probably trying to boot from that external device.
Yeah.
Right.
You've got to go into the BIOS and make sure when it's in the sequence for booting up that it's looking for your main hard drive.
Well, yeah, you can lower removable drives in the priority, which is annoying because then it won't boot a floppy.
Which is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
It means somebody can't walk up to your machine with a floppy, reboot your machine, and own it.
But when I'm trying to run SpinRite on a computer,
change that.
Right. But yeah, you can go in and set the priority. There's your fixed disks or your hard drive, depending on, you know, which version of the BIOS you have. It might be called something else. There are your removable drives or your USB drives or your, what's the other word they use? I forget. And then there's the there's network drives and there's the CD-ROM drive.
Mm-hmm.
Safest on any machine is to make sure the hard drive boots first,
mm-hmm.
followed by generally the CD-ROM drive and then any removable drives.
I usually like the CD first so you can boot diagnostic discs.
Well, you do, but yeah. Safest...
For regular folk.
Right, safest is the hard drive first.
What is the easiest way to get to the BIOS?
It's the setup. So when you're starting your machine, it'll say something like press F2 for setup.
Or delete.
Yep. Or delete or escape or whatever, backspace, or whatever it is in any one machine.
Okay.
The setup is the BIOS.
And do I need the Western Digital hook to the computer to do that?
No.
No.
Okay.
But remember, that happens before the boot up starts. It's when you see the splash screen.
Yes.
For the machine itself.
Okay. All right, we can do that then.
Yes, you can.
And I'll let you know how great this works.
Thank you.
There you go.
Sounds like this ought to solve our problems for backing up to have a terabyte available.
The next step is after you run your backup, disconnect the drive, shut it down, and put it in a data-ready fire safe in another building.
Right.
For the really paranoid.
Well, we're not quite that paranoid, but we want to have something that is easy for her to use. She can just turn on the computer and forget about what she's doing, so it's backing up for her all the time.
Right.
To have it set up in RAID 1.
That's the way to do it.
All right. That takes care of a problem for today.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. You have a great show.
You too.
Thank you.
I back up over the internet using 1024-bit encryption to another machine that's...
Only 1024-bit.
Yeah, it's really, I did, you know, I was lazy. I was lazy. Should have been 2K or 4K encryption. Our next caller, Jerry from Gates is back. Jerry, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
I got cut off earlier, but I called you last week regarding McAfee versus MicroTrend virus software.
Right.
So I went out and bought it, and I tried to install it.
Which one?
The Micro Internet Security.
The Trend Micro?
Yeah.
Right.
But what happened is, because I have dial-up, the internet cuts me off after 4 hours. I can't download it after 4 hours. I called them.
You have to stay there and hit a key every half hour or so to make sure it's alive.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
You need to do is keep the connection alive. And the way you do that is either by simultaneously running your email program, for example, which... checks the internet every 10 minutes or whatever it is, and that keeps the connection alive, or by going to a website every hour or so, that keeps the connection alive.
Oh, really?
While this downloads in the background. It just needs to know that something more is happening than just one download, because that could be you running one of those peer-to-peer networks and sucking down every song you can think of. And they don't like that. So you have to prove you're a human being on the line by, at some point, sending something out over the net. And the best way to do that is, for example, to go to your web browser and look at a website.
Okay. Now, they also, when I called them, told me to go and do it manually and gave me the file that they change every day to download it.
Right.
Which would download it quicker. And it did. Okay.
Right.
And each time I did that, it was like 3 hours and 4 minutes or something like that. And it was a zip up compressed file. And every time I go to open it, it says there's an error in it and we can't open. There's no files.
Well, there's two things here. First, if you haven't installed the software, you probably can't open the data file.
No, I installed the software.
Oh, the software is installed.
I did install it, and it took two portions of it. But the virus scan portion, it won't do.
Yeah. One of the problems with dial-up is that you're not guaranteed a good connection.
Yeah.
So it is very possible that vast portions of your download were in some way damaged.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is probably find a friend who's got a broadband connection and a CD burner. Ask them to download the software for you, not install it, but burn it to CD. Take that CD to your home and install it from there.
Is that the only thing I can do then?
That's pretty much it, Jerry.
Yeah.
You're limited by the fact of dial-up.
Okay.
By the simple reality of dial-up.
And you'll have to do this every couple of days when new updates come out.
Oh, my.
You should do it every few days.
I should bring it back to the store and go back to McAfee.
No, it has nothing to do with the brand of virus protection.
Yeah,
every virus update that you get is going to take this long to come down.
Yep.
Oh,
whether you do McAfee, Norton, AVG, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I've had McAfee for 3 years and never had a problem.
Well, all I can say is go back to McAfee.
It may not have been working then.
Yeah, if you had it did you pay for it every year?
Yeah.
Then it should have been working. Certainly McAfee would be fine. I found that both AVG and particularly Avast don't take that long to download.
Yeah, especially once they get the initial files down.
Right. Once you've got the initial program installed, it doesn't take that long because it only downloads the new definitions and adds them to the already existing DAT file.
All right, so I should bring it back to the store and try the AVG and the Avast.
Try AVG. You don't need more than one.
Okay, try AVG first.
Try AVG first.
Yeah, and that's free.
AVG is free. Avast is free. McAfee will pay for.
Okay. Thank
Good luck.
You.
Yep. Thanks. It's a real problem when you have dial-up. It's right. just there's so many huge files out on the net now. People have kind of been left behind who still have dial-up, and there's a vast portion of the country that has it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, 52 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Nate Nickens.
And at 56 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Welcome, Gerd. What's your question?
Hello. Spam. I get probably 150 plus a day, and
Piker.
It's a pain to, you know, get rid of them or delete, 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 delete. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What is your email program?
What do you mean by that?
What program do you use to get your email? Outlook Express?
Yes.
Yes. That's part of the problem. Outlook Express does not have a good or even vaguely useful spam filter.
I also use Gmail, and I get none.
Because Gmail has an excellent spam filter. It all goes into the spam folder, and you never have to see it.
Gotcha.
If you want to get no spam at home, you can do one of two things. You can either buy a spam filter for Outlook Express, or you can use a different email program that does have good spam filtering.
Roadrunner?
Roadrunner is not an email program. It's a way you connect to the internet.
Zone Alarm, the new version of Zone Alarm has a spam filter in it, too. No.
For
the newest version.
For email spam?
Yep.
Basically, a different email program like Thunderbird that has a spam filter already built in.
But if you don't want to change your email program, although you should, you might want to download the newest version of Zone Alarm, run it with its anti-spam filter running, and that should help.
One of the big reasons you're getting spam is because you're using Outlook Express. There are so many holes and security problems in Outlook Express, you get more spam because of it.
Do I have to change my email address?
No. If you use Zone Alarm, or even if you use Thunderbird, you don't have to change your email address at all.
Okay.
Either way is good. Try Zone Alarm, the free version of Zone Alarm, and see if that helps. We're done for another week. I'm sorry, Gerd. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Chris Reich comes in every week and records the show as if we were paying him. God bless him. He gives us his expertise.
Love the donuts.
Nate Nickens, who did a great job. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour on Soundbites.